Like a whack.
Yeah. Good afternoon. The meeting of the House Transportation Committee will come to order at 1:45 p.m. in room 124. Today is Thursday, February 15th, 2018. We have members present, Representative Drummond, Representative Kopp, Representative and Co-Chair Wool, and myself, Co-Chair Stutz. I would like to thank you all for your patience in waiting for this, and let the record reflect we do have a quorum. We're also joined by Sandra Edwardson from the House Records, Doug Bridges from the LIO, and my Transportation Committee aide is Graham Judson. He's over here. If you need anything or need to communicate with any member sitting at this table, if you get the attention of my committee aide, he will facilitate that for you. We also have Representative Clayman just joining us. Today we'll be hearing a presentation and an update from members of the Alaska Marine Highway Reform Steering Committee in Southeast Conference on the Marine Highway Reform Initiative. Typically, I would ask for the members of the committee to hold their questions until the end of the presentation, but I would encourage discussion throughout our meeting today, so the members should feel free to ask any questions. With that, to start things off, we have Robert Venables, Executive Director of Southeast Conference, Dennis Watson, General Manager of the Inter-Island Ferry Authority, and Shannon Adamson, thank you, from Masters, Mates, and Pilots. Welcome all, and if you would please step forward, have a seat, and put your name and affiliation on the table. We're looking forward to your presentation.
Good afternoon, committee members, Representatives Stutz and Wool co-chairs. My name is Robert Venables. I'm Executive Director for Southeast Conference, and we're really excited to be able to share the findings and results that we have after 2 years of working on this project. With your permission, what we have today is a number of folks with short statements that will present some information to you before we bring our consultants forward to get into the findings and the PowerPoint that you have. So we'll go ahead and begin with Mr. Watson.
Okay, co-chairs, committee members, thank you for having us. We believe that in the magnitude of things, this is one of
the... Please identify yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Dennis Watson. I am the manager of the Inter-Island Ferry Authority, and in another life, I was a mayor for a number of years. So,
thank you.
The city of Craig. So sorry about that. Anyway, I don't have a written testimony here, but I'm winging it. We think that this, all of us here, all of us in this group think that this is really important, and we're so excited that the governor and the lieutenant governor and DOT partnered with us to try to take a look at ways to bring our marine highway system into this millennium. And it's a long time coming. We think we've made a lot of progress in this. And I just want to tell you that, you know, from my perspective as a ferry operator, the Marine Highway provides, at least in Southeast, it provides our access to the north at Haines and to the south at Bellingham and Prince Rupert. This feeder to all of our coastal and island communities is, I can't overstate the importance of it, whether it be just for transportation for a passenger and his vehicle, or access to goods and services and cultural events, school events, and the kind of things that people on the road system tend to enjoy. And certainly the Inter-Island Ferry Authority wouldn't exist without the Marine Highway System being functional. And so it's very important to us. And I know that the people in Western Alaska, the very remote communities that it accesses, you know, sometimes it's the only way to get things done there. So... I can't overstate the importance of it, and we've got a lot to tell you today, so I'm going to go ahead and pass the mic.
Hi, my name is Shannon Adamson. I'm the union representative for the steering committee. I am also the representative for Masters, Mates, and Pilots, which represents the licensed deck officers on board the ferries. Just a little bit of my background so you understand where I'm coming from when I speak. I have a Coast Guard issued license, and I sailed as a licensed deck officer with the Alaska Marine Highway System for 7 years before an injury put me ashore, and I've done the union position for 3.5 now. So I want to thank Robert and the steering committee and the Department of Transportation for creating the ability to make changes to the Alaska Marine Highway System and for making the unions as involved as they have. I think everyone understands that when the ferry system is in decline or it hurts the communities, but it also hurts the crew. Their livelihood is attached to those ships. So again, thank you for the opportunity to be as involved as we have been. So we want to make sure that we make it abundantly clear that the unions support this position. The ferry system is currently in decline, and it is, in our opinion, failing and has the opportunity to be pulled back by this project. And we appreciate that the unions have been consulted, and we don't always agree on everything that comes across the table, but with most negotiations, we're figuring it out, and we're able to get somewhere that either side is happy with or can tolerate. So again, I just want to emphasize that change is desperately needed, and this is positive change, and the unions support it.
So again, Robert Venable's Southeast Conference. And I also want to recognize in the audience Mayor Jan Hill from Haines, who is the Southeast Conference Board Chair, and our Petersburg Board Member as well. And we have two members of the Marine Transportation Advisory Board, Mr. Arnold and Norm Carson here. A third, actually, I want to have two other members come forward now to speak with you as well. And the real, I think, the beauty of this project is that it's Alaskans articulating what they need the Alaska Marine Highway System to be. And so when we started this process off 2 years ago, we wanted to make sure that we were hearing from Alaskans from across the state. And as you'll see throughout the presentation, our steering committee is statewide members that come from Fairbanks, come from Anchorage area, they come from out the chain, they come from Cordova, Prince William Sound. We're all involved in this together, and very integral to the concept of having a working mechanism that goes from the wheelhouse all the way throughout the boat as well as the system. Labor is at the table. And no, we don't always agree on every aspect of how things should be, but at the table, they have the opportunity to make the argument, and they are part of the team. And as you'll see as we go through the modeling that we have for what we believe the solution set is with a public corporation, that union participation and labor representation is maintained throughout. So there's a lot of questions that come through the rumor mill of what the intent of this project is. It is really at the heart of it to create a management structure that's empowered to make the decisions, to control the cost, and to create new revenue streams that the system then can be relied upon and have a sustainable basis to move forward. So
just one moment to recognize the fact that Representative Sullivan Leonard has joined us, as well as Representative Parrish. So thank you for that. And I also got you, didn't I? Representative Kopp, didn't I get you earlier? I think so.
So, and at this time, I'd like to invite two others to come forward, Alaskan businessmen that utilize the ferry system, have been part of the planning process. Mr. Wakefield is also a member of the Marine Transportation Advisory Board, and Mr. Kinzinger is a former chair of that board, and allow them to put some comments to you as well.
Hi, I'm Dave Kinzinger from Petersburg, Alaska. It's kind of hard to know where to start. I've been in business now for 40 years in Alaska. I sell produce, and I've probably ridden and used a ferry more than a lot of the crew members have actually spent time on it over the 40 years. Actually, until about 3 years ago, or even longer, between my wife and myself, we would actually get on the ferry over 100 times a year. So I really know the importance of the ferry system on the granular level to all the communities. And I also see on the ferry system hundreds of travelers over the years that their destination just simply isn't Southeast Alaska. The statistics show that they go throughout the entire state. And what I have seen over the years, and what I've tried to do over the years, is trying to rationalize how the ferry system works. Actually, earlier in February, there was a day where there was absolutely no ferries that were operating in Southeast Alaska. This is the first time this has happened since 1963. So that gives you an idea of the depth of the problem that exists right now. As a matter of fact, going from using the ferry system 100 times a year, I'm now to the point where I can't use the ferry at all. And actually, my one ferry trip that I was going to use in April to get a truck of mine to Sitka, where I was going to stay for the remainder of my season, has been canceled. So I don't even know if I'm going to be able to get on the ferry at all. But that said, I really believe in this process, because what it does is it allows us to bring some real fundamental business principles that I could not have survived in my business if I didn't do things like planning. I have to know more than a year out what I'm going to do. If I'm going to buy a large capital asset, like a truck or something else, I have to know how I can pay for it and how I plan to use it. And the problems with the ferry system is that we haven't had long-term planning. The cycle is from legislative appropriation year to year, and it does not allow us to get the type of system that we need to be able to operate efficiently. So what I feel that this process will do and this plan will do, it will bring some really important business processes that will enable the ferry system to increase ridership and to plan for the future. And my hope is that what that will eventually do is that will diminish the amount of money that we need to come and ask for every year in general fund dollars. The system will always need money to operate. It's public transportation. But what I want to see is I want to see more service, less cost to the state. But we can't get to that point until we have something like this operational, this business plan, and this change that we're proposing in front of you right now. Thanks.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and thank you very much for allowing us to make a presentation to you this afternoon. My name is Greg Wakefield. I'm the owner of AAA Moving and Storage. I'm from Anchorage, but we have offices throughout the state, seven locations, Fairbanks to Ketchikan, including Kodiak, Juneau, Sitka. So I've grown my business since 1983 from a small, local, one-truck operation to the biggest one in Alaska. And we are now a big, or would even be a bigger customer of the Marine Highway System if we could rely on its services. And when I was appointed to this committee, I brought a business, I think a business perspective and a businessman's, you know, expectations to the board and what I would expect a business of this size, because it is a business. This is not a, I mean, it's a public business, and it's not confused. We don't want to confuse it with a profit-making business, because it is public, but it has to be run, I believe, on certain business-type principles, and that is customer service, reliability of, you know, taking care of your customers, taking care of your employees, and meeting the needs of the marketplace. And when I came to the board, I was flatly surprised that some of these things were not addressed as I would have them addressed as a business person. But then I said to myself, if I would have started my business and I had a board of directors that changed every 2 years and a chief executive officer that could change every 4 years and make decisions, you know, based on the political, you know, winds, I don't know if I would have grown my business to where it is today. And what I see and what I am saying to you is that a public corporation, as we envision it, would bring in the benefits of government with the intent of business, you know, backgrounds and expertise and continuity of management and decision making.
You're talking about a system that has 60-year-old boats, and as anybody will tell you, you don't have 60-year-old vessels, you know, plying waters in most of the Western world. These are the vessels that are, you know, funded for, you know, they're sold for scrap or they're sent to some, you know, Philippines or some other, you know, for short-term hauls. And this is the type of system we have. I mean, your consultants will tell you that we should be planning on replacing a vessel every 6 years, not every 60 years. And I'm saying to you that we need a public model of some sort that will allow us to do the planning purpose so that this system will continue. When I came up to Alaska in 69, one of my first jobs was on the Wickersham. And I see that, you know, since then, the system's grown, but I don't think we've grown in a way that has always been the best. I think we've had hiccups and we've made mistakes. Of course, that can happen even with the public, you know, this type of partnership. But if we have a longer-term perspective and we have governments that goes beyond 2 years so they can do the planning, I think we will be able to produce a much better product, allow management to be more nimble, and get the professional management team that a system this big requires. The Marine Highway System is an integral part of public transportation, but it's also different from highways and airports. And I believe that if you have a focused professional board that helps direct the management system, you'll get much better, you know, decision makings that will, you know, allow for long-term sustainability and growth with the intent of really reducing the needs for general funding. I mean, like I say to everybody, I want my grandkids to ride on the ferry just like I did. And as we see it today, those, you know, we need changes for that to happen. I really hope that you'll look at this and you'll consider this because, you know, well, it might not be the best, you know, like to say, democracy is not the best form of government, and this might not be the ultimate form of management, but it's the best, and we studied this for 2 years, it's the best that we've seen, and we really recommend that you hope that you'll take a strong look at it and move it forward. Thank you.
Thank you.
Back on the record, Robert Venables with Southeast Conference. So, much like we did with the project itself, we went and listened to Alaskans first before we started writing our findings and taking a look at what information was out there. And I'd like to invite our consultants now to come forward. And I wanted you to have an opportunity to hear from Alaskans first as well as we went into what you have now before you with the PowerPoint presentations. And so we'll walk through this and I'm sure invite your questions along the way. Thank you.
Representative Stutes, Representative Wool, excuse me, Chair Stutes, Chair Wool, and representatives. My name is John Waterhouse. I'm with Elliott Bay Design Group, a naval architecture and marine engineering firm in Seattle that has been working with the Alaska Marine Highway System for 30 years. We've had the great pleasure of working with Southeast Conference on this study, and I would like to briefly present some of the work that we've done and some of the conclusions that we've reached. The purpose of the project was to create a strategic plan for the Alaska Marine Highway System. It was divided into two phases. First phase was to identify and reaffirm the missions and goals of it and to examine different governance structures that are used by ferry systems around the world to see if there's one that might be preferred or optimal for the Marine Highway System. Phase two was to look at the operational revenue and planning aspects of the Marine Highway System and to create recommendations on how to move the system forward. The team consisted of Elliott Bay Design Group with the invaluable support of the McDowell Group and KPFF Engineering Consultants in Seattle. We had a statewide steering committee and we had strong support from the governor and lieutenant governor. As I mentioned, the phase one scope of work began with a listening session. We had a statewide summit in Anchorage. We've had extensive interviews with key stakeholders at different parts of the Marine Highway System, the Department of Transportation, Department of Administration. We've looked at, as I said, other ferry systems around the world to see if there are some best practices that could be adopted. We refined the mission statement, and we came up with a recommendation for a governance model. Phase two is to take the phase one work and really start digging in and saying, how would that recommended governance model, which is to create a public corporation, how would that really change the way the Marine Highway System is operated? So for phase two, we identified five tasks that would be undertaken. You can see those on the screen. There were three tasks that we did not take due to lack of funding, but tasks that certainly need to be considered going forward to, again, continue to engage with the public, to examine the capital needs of the system going forward, and to craft a transition plan to take it from where the system is today to an improved future. The revenue analysis, we identified the mix of public funding, revenue generated through the fare box. We evaluated different tariff structures, and we considered, tried thinking outside of the box. Were there other partnerships with private operators, tribal entities, municipalities? How can we truly take a fresh look at the revenue side? Our findings from that, the Marine Highway System generates $50 million a year in annual operating revenue from ticket sales, from onboard food sales, and from terminal operations. One of the strong findings of the revenue examination is that Bellingham route, the connection to Bellingham, is responsible for 44% of the total system revenue.
I have a question.
Certainly.
Do you know how many trips a year the ferry goes from Bellingham to up to Alaska?
Chair Stutes, I don't remember that off the top of my head. They look at operating about 350 service weeks a year across all their vessels. I do not know. Perhaps we don't have those figures at our fingertip,
no,
but they're in the report.
That's no problem. Thank you.
Yep. So what our revenue analysis has identified is the importance to all Alaskans of having those non-Alaskan visitors contribute, because they help underwrite the system. So every Alaska traveler benefits from having these other entities spend their dollars and ride the ferry system.
Representative Wolf.
Thank you. Representative Stutes, and I see you highlight that Bellingham's 44% of total. Is this because it was a topic that came up that maybe because it's out of Alaska and it's further away that it was maybe on the chopping block, or is it just you just brought it up as a piece of information, the Bellingham component?
Chair Stutes, I will turn this over to Susan Bell to respond.
I'm Susan Bell, one of the owners of McDowell Group, and our firm contributed to the revenue analysis as well as looking at the governance model and the public outreach. And so actually in the revenue analysis, one of the things we did look at was all of the numbers. What we were able to present by route, where the revenue is coming from. We also looked at the markets in terms of Alaskans that are riding the ferry. But I think that it is an inherent question that people have asked about you know, would the system be functional? Can it sustain itself if it was operating within Alaska? So it was an inherent question in our mind. But we highlight this because it's important. You know, as John Waterhouse mentioned, that the system overall benefits. There's an operating scale that Alaskans get by having that system. And if you lop that off, we wouldn't have a system that we would recognize or would be sustainable without it.
Thank you. And I guess a follow-up would be, and I don't need to get into all these details right now, but if 44% of revenue is due to Bellingham and therefore you say it's a good component, you don't list the percentage of costs that it costs to go to Bellingham and the maintenance of the long haul and all that. But again, I'm not necessarily asking you for that, but
and
since you brought it up.
And Representative Will, through the chair, again, I think as our firms were working, it was really complementary with the depth of marine expertise that Elliott Bay brought to this, and in leading it, they did more of the operational analysis. So again, we've got some pieces that fit into the report. We're also taking notes in terms of some follow-up that we can delve back into the details afterwards.
Yeah, I didn't mean to stop you.
Thank you.
This is John Waterhouse with Elliott Bay Design Group. We also found, no surprise, that the ferry system relies upon the general fund of the state of Alaska in order to underwrite its operations. In fiscal year 2017, that was $89 million. Want to emphasize the point that Alaska Marine Highway System provides public transportation. It is a public good. The Marine Highway System will always rely upon some level of public funding in order to be able to operate. It is not feasible, given the geography of Alaska, given the ridership levels, for the Marine Highway System to operate, cover all of its operating costs out of the fare box.
Excuse me, we have a question from Representative Sullivan Leonard.
I apologize. If we could go back one slide. I didn't have a chance to ask a question through the chair. When you discuss the best opportunity for revenue growth is through forward funding, could you expand on that a little bit? Give me an example of why that is so.
Representative Sullivan Leonard, through the chair. This is John Waterhouse of Elliott Bay Design Group. One of the key aspects of transportation is the reliability of transportation. We have seen with the decrease in funding for AMHS that the system is struggling to be reliable. The less reliable the system is, the less people will want to use it. So we think forward funding or stable funding for the system is essential to allow those non-Alaskan residents, which represent your opportunity space for growing the ridership, they have to plan. And most people, if they're planning a vacation, they want to be able to plan with confidence 6 to 12 months out. If the Marine Highway System lacks the funding stability for them to publish a schedule 6 to 12 months out, it's hard to attract those people. So we think that those are inherent aspects. If you want to grow fair revenue, you've got to have the stability so that people can plan around the use of the system.
Follow up, Representative Sullivan Leonard.
Thank you. Just to follow up on that then, as we look at the potential for this to be a corporation, how does that then tie into this?
Representative Sullivan Leonard, through the chair. This is John Waterhouse again. That's a great point. You heard earlier from Greg Wakefield the intention that a public corporation would operate more nimbly, more like a business. And like any business, you look at how do we enhance our revenue? And one of the ways you enhance your revenue is you say, what's the customer experience? How can we improve on that? Can we make the vessels more reliable? Can we offer service that operates on a better schedule to suit our ridership? So those are all the things that we think as a public corporation with a good management team, give them the tools and the ability to make those business-like decisions to improve the system for the benefit of not just Alaskan residents, but all the users of the system. So we have looked at, as part of our work in this, we've looked at other ferry systems both globally and nationally. We looked at the Scottish ferry system, which operates in a very similar geography. You've got ferries serving remote small island communities. You've got some ferries that are operating in connecting larger towns and municipalities. We've also looked at BC ferries, obviously a neighbor just to the south. BC has a mix of both highly urban runs connecting Nanaimo and Vancouver. It's also got some routes, obviously, that are serving more isolated parts of BC. So we tried finding what are the best practices and what are some common themes. And both of those ferry entities have found that public corporation model to be quite effective in both retaining the necessary links to the public funding, the benefits that the public can provide, but also to give them the ability to do that kind of long-range planning that, as we heard, any business would want to be able to do. So those are the reasons why we feel this public corporation model gives that foundation that can be built on to basically reinvent the marine highway system for the next 50 years. It's had a terrific run for 50 to 60 years, but it's now time to give it that fresh look.
Follow-up, Representative Sullivan Leonard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so as we look at the thought of a corporation for the marine highway system, what are we anticipating then for the fiscal note in order to implement this?
Representative Sullivan Leonard, through the chair, this is John Waterhouse again. We have not run any estimates of what the transition plan is going to cost. You heard me speak earlier. That was one of the aspects of our original study that was not funded. We think that's clearly a subject that needs to be looked at, is what would it take if this a public corporation were to come about, what would it take to get that entity to a point where it really has its feet under it and is operating smoothly and efficiently. That's some legwork that I would say with the commissioner and the Department of Transportation, consulting with them, needs to be defined and looked at. Carrying on with my presentation, one of the things that we looked at as part of the revenue study was what's the price elasticity? In other words, if we lowered ticket prices, would enough additional people ride the ferry system in order to compensate for the lower fares? We heard anecdotally from a lot of the public listening sessions, people have this opinion that if you just lower the fares, more people will ride. What we actually found is that the that would not occur. There is not enough elasticity to demand. There would not be enough additional riders to compensate. So the fare structure of the marine highway system is something that will need to be looked at carefully by the public corporation to try and really evaluate. I know the marine highway system is trying to rebalance some of the fares across the routes. And I think that would be an ongoing focus of any additional new management team to continue looking at that. There are also opportunities, if you look at what the cruise industry does in terms of dynamic pricing, there are some models there that might be able to be adopted that are modern business practices, reflect what airlines and cruise lines are doing with their customer base. The next task that we did is we did an operations analysis, which is really a dive into the current system, wanting to get an understanding of what are the gears and levers within the system, how does the system make decisions, how do they man the vessels, how do they manage the terminals. It's very clear that this is a complex system. You have 9 vessels, you've got 36 ports of calls, you've got over 3,000 miles of routes that you're dealing with. There are not simple solutions to complex systems. Further complicating things is you have an aging fleet that, as we have seen lately, has introduced uncertainty into the system. Vessels have not come out of their shipyard periods on time. That disrupts the system and, again, puts the management team into a crisis reactionary mode rather than the ability to sort of do some forward thinking and planning if they're always reacting to crisis. So once again, the underlying message is that residents, communities, and businesses are looking for reliability of service. Strengths. The marine highway system has an incredible group of people dedicated to running the system. You talk to people on the docks, you talk to people on the ships. Everyone wants to do it right or do it better than it is today. It also provides, obviously, a vital service to the communities that it serves, many of which have no other alternatives in terms of transportation. Weaknesses. We mentioned the lack of funding certainty, the aging fleet, and what we saw is that we think there's some alignment that needs to be improved between management and labor. And we think that the public corporation would provide that opportunity to get management and labor focused on a common vision and working together.
Question. Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. a couple questions. You mentioned aging fleet and 9 different vessels, and I know that there's a couple probably in repair right now. I think we were presented there might be 11. I don't know how many actual ships there are that are available, but maybe not functional. When you look at other systems, say Scotland or places like this, do they tend to have more uniformity in their fleet? So there's more, you know, interchangeability of parts and maintenance requirements. Is this an anomaly, what we have, or is this pretty standard to have all different kinds of vessels?
Chair Wool, this is John Waterhouse of Elliott Bay Design Group again. Most ferry systems are operating with a legacy fleet. As I mentioned, ferries tend to be long-term capital assets. In Europe, typical ages of ferries are 25 to 30 years. Some of the Scottish ferries are in the 40 to 45-year age. The U.S. is an anomaly in that we have ferry operators such as Washington State and State of Alaska that are operating vessels into their 60 to 65-year age range. So I think part of the future of the ferry system is to rationalize some of the fleet, to get some of those, if you will, Alaska Airlines benefits from having more standardization of the fleet. The challenge is you're dealing with a variety of ports. Obviously, a Columbia-sized vessel cannot get into Angoon to serve the community there. You've got ocean routes that a smaller vessel like the Aurora Lekani can't operate on. So you'll always have a variety of vessels in the fleet. The challenge will be to minimize the number of different vessels and to standardize things within those vessels to get those efficiencies of scale. And that's part of, again, why the planning and strategic vision of a public corporation we think would help drive it in that direction.
And my one more question, management, labor, alignment, that's probably a lot in those three words that sounds easy. We just have to get a little alignment here, but that there's probably the devil's in the details, and that is a whole nother discussion. Or I imagine you guys spend a lot of time on that, and it probably has to do with wage and benefits and these kind of things. Is that that's a Pandora's box, I'm guessing, to a certain extent, maybe?
Chair Wool, this is John Waterhouse again. We did have extensions discussions on that. We met with representatives of the three marine labor unions. We met with the Department of Administration. One of the challenges right now is the collective bargaining agreement negotiations are handled by the Department of Administration, not by the Marine Highway System. The Marine Highway System is in the room and advising, but they're not directly controlling their labor negotiations, and labor is the largest cost center in running the ferry system. So there's no business out there that would not want to control their largest cost center. So again, I think that's part of the discussion as we have going forward, and we heard from Shannon Adamson earlier. Labor recognizes they need to be at the table. They want to be at the table. And so I think that's part of the good news story here is that we've got a team, a sentiment that it's going to take all parties to make this system better and to work together. And again, to use the Alaska Airline model, you know, Alaska Airlines learned long ago that, you know, it's your frontline people, it's your people maintaining the airplanes. You've got to get those aligned with management if you're going to deliver a quality product.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So continuing with my discussion, task three was operations financial model. And the reason we created a financial model was to give us the ability to test different ideas or concepts. To test whether a route to Bellingham does indeed cover its costs or make more sense, to test whether a fleet of 4 shuttle ferries or 3 shuttle ferries could deliver the service levels that are expected by the communities. So as you can see on the screen, we identified some primary vessel cost drivers. I've already mentioned that personnel and travel are the largest cost center within the Marine Highway System. Obviously, there are capital improvements and maintenance that are ongoing and increasingly challenging as the fleet ages. The one bright spot is that recently fuel prices have been down, but we know fuel prices do not tend to stay down forever. We think that shifting to a modern fleet, changing the governance system, will provide cost improvements in the system. Once again, we don't see any scenarios by which all of the operating costs can be covered by the fare box. Washington State is fortunate in being able to cover 75% of their operating costs through the fare box, but then they have ferries serving dense urban areas and moving a lot of people every day back and forth. By contrast, North Carolina, another state ferry system, they only recover 13% of their operating costs through the fare box. So different states have taken different approaches to this public transportation policy. We think that the Marine Highway system can improve its fare box recovery, but it can do so by growing the revenue side and by making the fleet more efficient. Our fourth task that we looked at was diving a little bit into the corporate structure to look at whether the Alaska Railroad could be a model that could be used, to look at all the different ways in which the Marine Highway System is connected to other parts of state government. Because we needed to validate our opinion from phase one that the public corporation would be the best model. But the only way to really validate that was to dig in, as was expressed earlier, the devil is in the details. Findings here, we found that shifting it to a public corporation would still maintain the incredibly important benefits of access to federal funds, to continue with interdepartmental coordination with the AG's office, with the Department of Administration, all those things that touch on the Marine Highway System. And we also think that it will address some of the existing limitations. As was mentioned earlier, we think it will reduce the turnover in senior leadership. We think it'll improve labor negotiations, we think that with some strategic thinking, some of those labor costs can be controlled or even reduced as we look at automation and system efficiencies. And finally, task five of our effort is we recognize the Marine Highway System does not exist in a vacuum. It relies upon the goodwill of Alaskans. And we did an extensive public and stakeholder engagement to try and understand the what were the friction points. McDowell Group created a website. We solicited a lot of comments and feedback from the public. The result of all that was used to help inform our report and guide our recommendations. So some of the findings of that stakeholder effort, obviously, there are communities that strongly express the vital importance of the Marine Highway System. We also recognize that continued outreach is important. When you look at, again, mentioning Alaska Airlines, what they do to keep creating those touch points with their customers, to keep their presence in the mind of people, we think there are some lessons there that can be learned and applied to the benefit of the Marine Highway System. Finally, I want to thank our Project Steering Committee. We had the Steering Committee involve people from all over Alaska, obviously the coastal communities, but we all did have representation from Fairbanks, and we also had strong participation by Commissioner Lucan and the DOT group. This study was partly funded by the government, by the executive branch, but as you can see here under project sponsors, we had a lot of communities that contributed. So once again, I think the importance here is this was not done in a vacuum. It has reached out and brought in information from many, many groups. And at this point, I would like to turn it over to Susan Bell for her to present where we're at today.
Again, Susan Bell with McDowell Group. And what I'm going to touch on is phase three, during phase two, which we concluded with the draft report at Southeast Conference and presented it in Haines in September, throughout phase two, we didn't have funding for a transition plan. At this stage, we have a lean transition plan going forward, and the first element has been completed, and that was a tactical strategy, which was largely describing for the steering committee, Southeast Conference board, and others that are involved, the legislative process, timing, what happens through budget, and how the steering committee and the public can engage in that. So again, it was a brief white paper on that, and it's been posted on the website. What we're doing now, working with the administration, is identifying interim measures. What can be done now while legislation is being drafted and contemplated? Can the system begin to move towards some of these objectives or implement some of the things that came out in the phase two report? And then the third, which will be more detailed, is if the legislation is passed, how do we get from the current organization to the future? So again, at this stage, we presented at Southeast Conference. They met in Juneau, as you're probably aware, this last week. We presented some of the initial concepts, and this is pulling out of ideas from the phase two report, so you'll see some consistency throughout this. As I said, we're identifying actions that can be taken now, and importantly, looking for if there's an administrative order, an executive order, or something else that's needed for the system to implement it. If not, identifying if there's any other barriers. You've heard funding being mentioned, and so it's an urgent issue aside from the legislation on transforming into a public corporation. So I won't belabor this point, but we shared it with the membership at Southeast Conference this week. Fleet and terminal standardization, Elliott Bay has much more depth in this, but we wanted to be sure this stays on the table as Marine Highway is making decisions that, you know, are about training, about maintenance, about port operations, about reservation systems. There's things that are going to be actions that they take today that can help position them in the future to have more of a consistent operations in fleet and terminals. So again, we've identified these as concepts, and we'll be working more closely with Department of Transportation, the Governor's Office, and administration to identify more details. As Co-Chair Wool was asking about a few moments ago, there's a little more detail here on labor relations that I'd like, has been shared. Department of Administration leads the negotiations now. Marine Highway has been a participant. We've tried to establish that rather than blunt actions be taken, that if Marine Highway is leading in the negotiations, we think that not only are they able to develop the expertise that is needed if they're then in the position as a public corporation to lead the negotiations, but we also think that a position of Director of Labor Relations should be contemplated. And so we want to raise that now. That may be now, that may be next year. But again, moving forward, there's considerable time that Captain Falvey and other seniors are engaged in terms of disputes, discipline, and negotiations. These are important actions. But again, part of our role, while Elliott Bay had looked at ferry systems throughout the world, one of the things that McDowell Group did was look at a number of our public corporations, including the Railroad, Mental Health Trust Authority, Permanent Fund Corporation, and see what lessons were applicable here. In this example, the Railroad has a single Director of Labor Relations that does something that we think would be appropriate. So it's building that knowledge and relationships. And as we've talked about this turnover, the turnover is not only in Department of Transportation, it's in the Governor's Office and in Department of Administration. This is a very complex system, a very steep learning curve for these labor negotiations. And so, again, we just respect the demand of that and think that the system would benefit from continuity in this type of position. So it's a little more detail here on that.
It would seem to me what you're saying, too, and was mentioned somewhat earlier by Mr. Waterhouse, there needs to be a little more continuity. Every time there's a change in the administration, then there's potentially a change in the commissioner of DOT, which means there's a whole change in the whole Alaska Marine Highway System, as we've seen by the two Lynn Canal ferries being currently built instead of the one ferry that was intended to be built. So I would think that the public-private partnership having would offer a lot more stability to the department or to the whole process, I should say.
Co-Chair Stutes, we concur, and again, those things that tie in, it ties throughout. So if you've got a change in vessel, then there's going to be changes in the training needs and possibly port configurations and operations there and the contracts. So again, your example carries throughout the system and clearly ends up with budget implications. We did market analysis and revenue analysis in the context of phase two, and we've touched on a little bit of those findings, not only looking at their recent revenues and their port pairs and understanding resident revenue on it, non-resident revenue. It's a jam-packed with information about the system, and for many people, including some of the steering committee members who have served on MTAB and Department of Transportation staff themselves, it was a new lens on that. So I think it was very valuable, and people continue to refer to this section. We also looked at non-operating revenue sources, and that might be because people have raised examples of what would if you had established a fund, what could you draw on that? What would an increase in gas sales tax be? What would the lottery be? So there's a number of ideas that have been tossed out that have been examined a bit in this report. But the point we're making here as an interim measure is that the system itself needs to delve more deeply beyond the context of our study and really understand the markets, deploy their marketing resources and their assets effectively. And as you've heard, we've touched on the Bellingham and the non-resident component. It's also really important to understand that the passengers, both residents and non-residents, have statewide impacts. And so we've pulled out a few statistics from market research we've done in the context of this study and outside of it. But non-residents, when they're traveling on the system, they travel extensively through the road system. The most visited destination by non-residents is Anchorage. More than half visit Anchorage. This is consistent with other work that we've seen. You know, McDowell Group also has had a long history with the ferry system, looking at their markets. More than a third visit Denali and a quarter visit Fairbanks. So again, while the numbers may change by a few digits every few years when we have an opportunity to study it, this has been a consistent theme. So again, the non-resident travelers are touching the road system in particular.
Yes, excuse me while I recognize Representative Christ Tompkins has joined us. Representative Sullivan Leonard.
Thank you, through the chair. Susan, I'm just looking at the numbers here. You've got Anchorage, Denali, and Fairbanks. So what happened to Mat-Su?
I should have
cruise on by.
Representative right, Sullivan Leonard, through the co-chairs, I should have anticipated that question. These were the top three destinations on the road system. The flyer that you have, if you open that up, you'll see a map with Alaska, and you'll see a little more detail there. But we'd be happy to follow up with a more comprehensive picture too. But again, I picked a few of the top ones in part to just help make the point that they're off. They're out of the coastal communities.
I just want to be competitive with Fairbanks.
Representative Paul.
Thank you, Chair Stutes. I know that the cruise ships do a lot of this analysis about which ports and where they go. I'm just curious which ferry port is accessing people to South Central and up through the rail belt, because I didn't think Seward is, or Whittier or Valdez. In other words, how are they getting to Anchorage and then hence up through the interior? Because I didn't know that there was easy ferry access. Homer, I guess. I don't know.
Co-Chair, well, a really significant point of embarkation and disembarkation is Haines and also Skagway. But there are revenue. There are some tables, and I'd be happy, as this meeting concludes, just to show you the port pairs, because we're able to look at by revenue and by passengers, which are popular. But having observed ferry traffic, you know, while we do have cross Gulf ferries, a lot of folks are anxious to get on the road system and travel up through the rest of the state through Haines and Skagway.
Yeah, follow up with him. Yeah, I'm familiar with the Haines, and that's I have certainly taken that route to get to Fairbanks. It's not the easiest or quickest way, and you have to cross an international border, which also makes it a little more cumbersome. And and I don't know what your sewer status is, but just a thought. He's shaking his head no. No sewer. So, you know, you were talking about the operating this as a corporation similar to the railroad, and the rail. I mean, I was just looking at those three cities and seeing Seward, Anchorage, Denali, Fairbanks as a rail route, and tying it in with a ferry route would be a state corporate synergy that I'm sure you've all thought about.
Co-Chair, well, Robert Venable, Southeast Conference. Direct service to Seward was discontinued a number of years ago, so Whittier now is an active port for the Cross Gulf. And one of the things that we talked about, I also sit on the Marine Transportation Advisory Board, and it's very unique that someone in Fairbanks could pretty much walk to Miami by getting on the train, getting to Whittier, taking the Alaska Marine Highway System down through to Bellingham, continuing on to Amtrak, and just continue so there's an interconnectivity that we want to promote. And throughout this whole study, trying to remind all of us and other modes that this is an intermodal. So the Alaska Marine Highway System is a vital connection to the road system, the rail, and the airplanes as well.
Thank you.
And Susan Bell, resuming, I think that that's part of the point we're getting at is that as we uncovered a lot of information about total revenue, passenger ridership, and what percentage of it was from local residents, is using that information to make deployment decisions. So, I think you're hitting on a theme that continued market and revenue analysis is needed to guide the system, and we would see that a private corporation or a public corporation would probably be positioned to carry on this kind of analysis. We also, the numbers in this map are small. We were trying to fit the state into a PowerPoint slide here. But we also looked at the passenger ridership from throughout Alaska. And we want to make that point as well, because this system, while the revenues help support it overall, is intended to serve Alaska residents. And so the numbers just moving around the state, you can see 3,300 in that Fairbanks North Star borough little box, 3,300 residents coming from that area traveled on the system in the year that we were looking at. And moving around, you can see from South Central, the numbers are range in the Anchorage area, 12,000 passengers. But it's also important, even though to look up, there was 163 passengers from the North Slope borough area. Over 200 passengers from the Bethel census area. So again, they're small numbers, but we just, with this, what we were trying to illustrate graphically was that there are Alaskans from throughout the state, even communities not on the road system, that are that are passengers of the Alaska Marine Highway. And we threw in a couple of these just to be able to go to the farther flung areas and maybe surprise folks. But so here's again Fairbanks with 3,316 passengers, Bethel 218 passengers, and this data exists. The Marine Highway has it. We've been mining it, and it's created a lot of interest and questions too. So we can provide that map to you in a form that you can read the numbers. The last couple of things under the theme of interim measures, and again, these were things that, well, what can the Marine Highway start to do now with the information that has come out of the discussions in the Phase 2 report? Legislation is drafted or considered in the future. Again, operational efficiencies, aligning with, thinking about, well, where would the system like to be in the future? It's not going to be a magic wand, even if it's a public corporation, to change all the vessels, but making decisions that incrementally move them more towards the kind of system that we envision is important. And then something that does warrant further discussion is what kind of board and staff development would need to happen so that upon the effective date, if legislation was passed, you had the leadership skills and the business knowledge in place to move forward. So again, these discussions will get into more depth. You may have interest in a follow-up as they evolve, but we're wanting to help take this information and have the system move forward without waiting for some future date. In closing, you've heard us say this in lots of different ways about the importance of the system as a as part of the statewide transportation system, and also that there are statewide users and statewide benefits. We've talked about non-resident traffic, but I just want to harken back to both Greg and the other steering committee members that spoke today just about the business applications that are foregone revenue opportunities and foregone economic opportunities in our state with the system that we have now.
So, Madam Chair, Robert Venable, Southeast Conference. Just in closing, thank you for the opportunity to make the presentation. Southeast Conference was formed in 1958 primarily as one of the first objectives to create the Alaska Marine Highway System. And 60 years later, we have that same passion as an organization, as a region, and a state to recreate it. And we see this as an opportunity. We have at our office a stack, literally, of this big, over the years, articulating the problems of the Alaska Marine Highway System. This is really the first effort that identifies a solution set. It may not be perfect yet, but we're looking forward to engaging you and your colleagues as we go forward to find that more perfect management model going forward. And our consultants did an amazing job. At one point, there was over 3 million data points that they had been diving through to get this information together and to the report to make the best decisions possible. So. Again, thank you for the opportunity to present this, and we look forward to working with you going forward.
Well, I for one, am very appreciative that you were able to take the time and come and make your presentation. And I'm also very hopeful and excited to see that this is a statewide project. This is not an area-wide project to try and facilitate one area over the other. This is a statewide problem. And to see it being addressed in that manner is very encouraging to me. And I think we're headed down the right way, because I think we all want to end up in the same place, and that's at the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow.
Silver.
Oh, yes, silver.
Gold, never gold.
Golden. I guess it depends on what part of the state you're from. The pot, from my part of the state, we'd be happy to find a pot of fish at the end of the rainbow. So, do we have any other comments from any other committee members? Representative Cotton.
Yes, Madam Chair. I just want to say I'm really excited about the direction that the Marine Highway System, or I should say the certainly the Southeast Conference, is recommending that we go with AMHS. I think the possibilities of running this with a more business-like approach are very significant. Entering into a more direct rather than a mediated relationship with labor, also very effective, being more nimble and more responsive. Also, I think the ability, Madam Chair, for partnerships is greater, and in the dynamic opportunities as they arise, being more of a public corporation. I'm thinking that, you know, I know that I think that the governor has given a waiver to Prince Rupert on the Buy America Act for sourcing steel for a dock there. The goodwill with Canada is very high right now. Maybe that's an understatement. And, you know, there may be some things we could do with BC Ferries. There may be a lot of things that you all could do that are just not possible right now. And I'm excited. I think we are on the right track, and I just really applaud the Southeast Conference for doing the heavy lift and everybody involved that brought this forward. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Kopp. Are there other comments from Representative Drummond?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. I'm really excited to hear that this is moving in the right direction. I've had the pleasure of riding on the Inter-Island ferries from Ketchikan to Prince of Wales Island a number of years ago when my husband was working there. I'm glad that you have all the relevant expertise that you can find in the state from your list of stakeholders and committee members. I was born and raised in New York City. My grandmother lived on a 10-acre farm on Staten Island. I spent a lot of time riding Staten Island ferries to visit Yaya. And I didn't learn to drive until I was 23 because of the transit system available to me in New York City. My mother didn't learn to drive until she was 40. We didn't have to. So I really appreciate the perspective of Mr. Venables saying you can walk on in Fairbanks and walk off in Florida, for example. It's important to consider every user, and I think we see that in every DOT project needs to consider every user, not just cars on highways, for example. You got to consider the walkers, the strollers, the bikes, the hunters, even in some places the animals. But that's, I'm digressing. I like the way you have looked at how other states recover their costs. I found it very fascinating, and I don't see him here, but I did challenge the commissioner last week to show me what other part of the paved highway system recovers revenues to the degree that the ferry system does now. You know, that's just not happening. But to know that Washington covers just 75%, but serves dense urban areas. Which state was it that only covered 13% of its costs?
North Carolina.
Representative Drummond, through the chair, this is John Waterhouse. That was the state of North Carolina.
Okay.
And I'm pleased with your comment about Staten Island, because my firm has had the privilege of designing the new Staten Island ferries that are under construction right now. So we had extensive discussions with that ferry customer about the needs of their users. And so every system is unique, and Alaska is more unique than most. And I just encourage the committee to understand that that working with those complexities are part of what has to go forward. And really pleased that the Department of Transportation, the executive branch, labor, everyone is looking at it and saying now is that moment of crisis, but that moment of crisis is driving, hopefully, will drive change in a positive direction. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there other comments? Representative Paul.
Sure, I might as well jump in there. The idea of getting on Fairbanks and getting off Miami, certainly I'd have to have a lot more time in my life to do that. But my brother at this very moment is on a cross-country train trip. He went from L.A. to New York City, and they stop in various cities for a couple days. And but being on this committee and taking a recent trip to Kodiak with Representative Stutes and talking and looking at ferries a lot more certainly makes me excited about it and makes me want to hop on the next one. I wish they were a little more accessible to the road system, in that Whittier is probably you can drive to Whittier. I know that, but I'm looking forward to it. I guess a state corporation, that changing the model, I think is a great idea. I mean, obviously it's not a panacea, and there's still going to be a lot of things to figure out, but it sounds like you guys are on the right track, and looking forward to seeing what you come up with and getting the system robust and working for all Alaskans. So thank you for your work.
Thank you. No other comments? Thank you. Well, once again, I would like to take this opportunity to thank the Southeast Conference and the Steering Committee for the Alaska Marine Highway, and from Washington, and from the McDowell Group, the Elliott Bay Group. We're grateful to have you all here, and it's been very enlightening for the whole committee. So thank you, and we look forward to seeing how this progresses. And with that, I would like to say that next week, House Transportation Committee will be having a joint committee hearing with our counterparts from the other body, where we will be hearing from the new manager of the Ted Stevens Anchorage Airport. That meeting will take place on Tuesday, February 20th, from noon to 1 in the Senate Finance Committee Room. So, we hope to see you all there, and thank you for coming. And with that, and no further business to come before this meeting, we will adjourn at 2:55.